The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation. WTBQ.
And good morning and welcome to Health Matters. My name is Peter Feller. I'm the Director of Education at A&T Healthcare. And joining me this morning is my wife, Ann Feller, who is the Regional Director of A&T Healthcare, who is also the Director of Quality Assurance. Ann, could you tell our listening audience a great good morning?
Great good morning, everyone.
We have a great show for you today. Just something about A&T Healthcare. A&T Healthcare, we're a home healthcare agency. We have offices in Newburgh, Kingston. Our corporate office is in New City, New York. We also have it in Westchester, as well as New York City, as well as in New Jersey. We are a home healthcare agency. And one of the things that we always stress is that we're very happy and honored to be part of your Thursday mornings from 10 to 11 for Health Matters. What we do at A&T Healthcare and on Health Matters is that we inform our listening audience of important health-related topics that are very relevant or would be of very interesting concern to our listening audiences. And that's why today we have a very good topic, Ann, is that we have the topic which is on the Zika virus. So we'll be going into some of the details. One of the things that I always say about A&T, about the Health Matters, is that our show is not controversial, contentious, or confrontational. It is, I want to say, it's informative. It is very engaging, and it certainly is entertaining. That's what we always try to do, and we want to thank you all very much for making us a part of your Thursday morning here on Health Matters. Okay, before we get started, we've got a couple of little things, Ann.
Okay.
First of all, I do want to do a shout-out to our class that just graduated. We did have a class, a PCA class that just completed the course, and they all are going to do a superb job. I'm very happy with the class. They were very interested in it, and I'm very excited about them to get started. A lot of them are starting their career in the healthcare profession, and this is the way that they started. They started
Absolutely.
Right there. And
I
on a very selfish note, one of the things is that the students, when they pick up their paycheck on Friday, they run into me. And so often they're so happy and very pleased about it. And they said, and the joke that I always have is I said, trained by Peter. That was always my joke. And I always ask them, do they still have your sign? Oh, yeah, I still can. So one guy said, I have two signs up saying trained by Peter. But it is important, stuff like that. And if I've ever done anything that I've inspired someone to enter the healthcare profession or nursing or what have you, I'm always very pleased. And I always encourage it about it. I know we just had... last week we had, Sister Marie Buckley, who's on our board. She was a former chairman of the nursing program at the RCC. And we had their two guests that were just recent graduates. One's going to be graduating. And you can just see, the excitement and the energy that they want to, pursue this particular career. So I hope to my students that I've had, and I've been doing this for well over five years now. There have been many students that have crossed my path, and I always want to say in a very positive sense, and it's always refreshing when you see something like that, and they're doing very well. Oh, I remember when you said this, I remember when you said that, so it is something, and as you do say, we do have classes that are going to be scheduled up in Newburgh, as well as Kingston. Just call our corporate office, and they'll probably have the...
call our corporate office in New City at 845-638-4342, or... Right here in Orange County, we have a branch in Newburgh, and you can call them at 561-7900, and you can start the application process for the training class, which will be starting the end of February, beginning of March.
And
absolutely, it was great having Sister Buckley on, though the curriculum has changed since I went to school, but the goal and mission of the program remains, and they really turn out some great nurses there at RCC, And they have a very good pass rate.
I know, and Anne is a graduate of it, and so am I. And we always said, like, Tony Babington was also a graduate of it. But it's a wonderful career, and I think we really put, like, a perspective on it like that. As I said, the classes are open. There's no charge to it. However, there is an interview process, and that was one of the things that we talked about in the last show, is that it takes a certain kind of person to work with. So as I said, you would be interviewed on it. They would go through the thing and just to determine whether or not you would be accepted in the class. So I don't want people to think, oh, I just have to sign up and I'm going to get in the class. There's a little bit more
like
to
any
it than
other,
that. Like any other job, like any other training program.
You have to be passionate about what you want to do and want to do it.
So, that's right. So what else is coming up, Anne?
Well, let's see. Tomorrow is Friday, February 5th. Mm-hmm. And the first Friday of February, we celebrate National Wear Red Day for women.
Can men wear the red?
Everyone can wear red on that Friday. And that was started actually in 2003 by the American Heart Association and the National Heart and Lung Blood Institute. Heart disease is the number one killer of women in the United States, actually claiming more lives than all forms of cancer together. And this started in 2003 to raise awareness to women and heart disease because it's a disease that women might not necessarily pay attention to, and they believe that it affects men, more men than women, but actually women are very affected. From this action, the National Wear Red Day was born, and it is held the first Friday of every year in February, the first Friday of February every year, to raise this awareness. And actually looking back on what's been accomplished since 2013, there have been tremendous strides, including 21% fewer women dying from heart disease.
Wow.
Just by raising awareness.
I remember Rosie O'Donnell. She was like suffering a heart attack, and it was very, the way it manifests itself was quite different. And I know she really had made, people a lot of aware, like she'd been a very outspoken person on this particular issue, just that she had really a personal incident that had happened.
Absolutely.
Actually to her.
I think if you have, some personal involvement, whether yourself, your mom, a sister, a child, you certainly are become more in tune to it, but you do want to be aware of it. So tomorrow is that day, and it's a time to stand strong, speak loud, and join the fight during National Wear Red Day.
Okay, and that's part of like the awareness. That's what Health Matters does. Health Matters wants to keep you informed of different events, and also more importantly, the healthy lifestyle. That's what everything always comes back to, a healthy lifestyle, and what we always stress.
Yeah, exercise and diet. Those
that's
are
it. I'm sorry. It's all the old default. Healthy diet and healthy living and that sort of stuff. But the idea is it's something that you can do right now, and I think it's something that'll be very, very important. For everyone, just to be aware of it, okay? Particularly with women, you always associate it with men having the heart attack and stuff like that. But as we can see, women are very much prone to it as men are.
Absolutely.
Okay. Please don't forget to follow us on Facebook, okay? We have nice postings and things like that. And I think that's also very important what A&T does. Just go to our website, A&T Healthcare, or like us on Facebook. I think it would be very good. All right, let's get started on today's program, okay? Today's program, we're going to be talking about the Zika virus, okay? Now, there has been tremendous attention that you've seen on the media, be it the radio, the television, or in the newspaper. And what we'd like to do today is we'd like to present to our WTBQ listening audiences information and facts on the Zika virus. And this information is obtained from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as the New York State Department of Health. Those are all the ones so this is the information that we're relaying to you is from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as the New York State Department of Health. It is always important on health matters that, and that's what I was saying, is that we always want to inform a listening audience on topics that are important, and clearly this is important. The one thing to say about the Zika virus is it's very lucid in the fact that we are receiving information. They're updating the information as to what's happening. There are some basic things that haven't changed, but there's a lot more information that is going to happen. And I just get the sense that this is something that we probably will be updating throughout the course of the year. And if we have to have another show on it, we can always have Dr. Michael O'Dowd on it. He's our pharmacist. So I think that's something with the information that would be good. But now, one of the things, I don't want to draw a parallel to the Ebola virus, okay, because they are very different. But one of the things that we have to remember about the Zika virus as well as the Ebola virus is this is something that has been known. I mean, it's been around since 1940. They have had some different clusters that were there, but there was a dramatic spike in birth defects in Brazil. And that's what really triggered it. And what it is that there's a strong correlation, and we'll go into it, associated with being having a birth defect and being affected by the Zika virus. But what I always say in reference to health matters is this is something that the information we're giving you should be discussed with your doctor if you have any specific questions as to what to do or what not to do. You're listening to Health Matters, and when we come back, we'll go into more details on infection control and more on the Zika virus.
ANC Healthcare is a full-service home healthcare agency that works closely with your hospital discharge planner and other referral sources to ensure that all of you or your loved one's home healthcare needs are met. They provide short or long-term hourly or live-in home healthcare aides, LPNs, and highly trained and qualified nurses and therapists as needed. ANC Healthcare has earned a reputation for dependability, responsiveness, and personalized attention. By working in conjunction with nursing departments, HMOs, managed care insurance companies, and other referral sources, they act as facilitators in planning and anticipating patients' needs at home. ANC Healthcare hires the most qualified pediatric, high-tech RNs and LPNs. They provide care with the utmost compassion and sensitivity. ANC Healthcare are committed to providing their pediatric and adult patients with the highest standards of nursing care. By providing high-caliber, reliable nurses and high-quality service, ANC Healthcare consistently delivers more value for each dollar spent. Call 845-638-4342 or visit at-healthcare.com.
Hi, this is Lynn Allen Cione. I'm the president and CEO of the Orange County Chamber of Commerce. Join us every Friday at 12 noon when we will highlight Orange County Chamber's events and business right here on WTBQ Radio, worth listening to.
Hi, this is Marina Case of the Red Shutters in Warwick, New York. Tune in every Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. for The Style Show, a show about decorating, fashion, and fun on WTBQ Radio, worth listening to.
WTBQ.
And welcome back to Health Matters. Why? Because your health does matter. That's what I always say. My name is Peter Fella. I'm the Director of Education at A&T Healthcare. Joining me this morning is my wife, Ann Fell, the Regional Director of Patient Services at A&T Healthcare. And we have a great show today. We're giving information on the Zika virus. On the Zika virus, the information that is from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. We're really just highlighting it. And we want to put it in layman's terms so it's very straightforward and easy to follow. I know it's something that we've been hearing so much in the media, on television, as well as the newspaper, and, of course, radio. Radio, that's where we like to give our information.
Well, before we get started, Peter, you've had quite a career in infection control. Can you tell our audience a little bit about your experience in infection prevention and control?
Well, yeah, that was my specialty. As you know, I'm a registered nurse, and we were graduates of Rockland Community College, working for A&T Healthcare. That was one of my specialties. I was originally a microbiologist, and then what I did was I enjoyed it so much, but I wanted to go into nursing, just that there was more. This is what we talked about last week.
Yeah.
But what it was is I combined the two professions, and that's when I wound up going into infection control. And I really had a wonderful opportunity. I was able to work with Dr. Thomas Frieden when he was just starting out. He did the tuberculosis control. And that was something we had, you know, several papers that had been published on the use of it at St. Clair's Hospital. So I'm always like fascinated by infection control, about how things happen. And I thought, and
Peter,
maybe,
what is Dr. Frieden doing now?
He's still the director of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and he got a lot of, you know, attention during the Ebola virus and that sort of stuff. And as I said, there was a wonderful opportunity that I'm really thinking about right now.
Right. So, before we get started, can you explain the chain? What is the chain of infection?
All right, let me just make this very brief as far as how things happen. You don't turn around and say, gee, I got an infection. Oh, I'm infected. There's what is called a chain of infection. There's a certain number of events that have to take place in order for an infection to take place. So there are six chains to the infection, but I will give you the Reader's Digest version of it, which is much more abbreviated, but it still gives the same essence of how an infection takes place. The first thing is you need an infectious agent. That is what can cause an infection. It might be a virus, such as HIV, hepatitis B, or in this case, the Zika virus, or it could be a bacteria such as staph, beta hemolytic streptococcus, because you also, someone had strep throat. It could also be from a fungi as well as from protozoa. So those are what are called infectious agents, that which can cause an infection. What happens is that you have to have a host. Where are they living? Where is the organism present? Okay, and that would be an infected person. The key component to obtaining of having an infection is the mode of transmission. How does it go from one person to the other person? Many times the primary way in which it is vis-a-vis hand washing, direct contact. I'm sorry, not hand washing, direct contact.
Right. Hand washing is the prevention.
Hand washing is the prevention. I'm sorry.
Hand or contact with the person or an object.
Right. And then there has to be the susceptible host, which is the person where they're able to contract it, whether it's in their mouth, their nose, or if they have a cut in their skin. So there has to be a port of entry in order for the susceptible host to then become infected by it. So just to give you a quick example of it, as we know, we talk about the flu season. How is that transmitted? That is transmitted from direct hand contact. That's why I said more people received it from shaking hands with someone than from kissing someone, because it's really on your hands. And that's why they say hand washing is so important.
Because you're sneezing or you're blowing your nose.
An organism that, let's say, like pulmonary, like tuberculosis, that is an airborne, meaning that it is transmitted through the air. A person that's infected coughs, the spores of the tuberculosis goes into the air, and then a patient ingests it into their lungs, and they become infected. For the Zika virus, okay, let me tell you about the Zika virus, and then we'll go into their mode of transmission, the Zika virus is spread to people through mosquito bites, okay? The most common symptoms of the Zika virus are fever, rash, joint pains, and conjunctivitis. That's red eye. If you ever had that, it's terrible. And the illness is usually like has mild symptoms, and they only last for several days to a week. And very rarely does it require hospitalization. It's very uncommon.
So you might think you have something like the flu or a cold.
Yes. It could be something like that. We'll go with that. But it wasn't until May of 2015 that the Pan American Health Organization, they issued an alert regarding the first confirmed, they had a confirmed case of the Zika virus infection in Brazil. And the outbreak led to reports of, pregnant women giving birth to babies with birth defects and poor pregnancy outcomes. Now, what you have to remember is that there is a strong correlation between it, okay? It's not like a person can have, that can happen from other kinds of, what it was in Brazil, there were over 4,000 babies that were born with what is called microcephaly. And since the outbreak started in Brazil, and it was over a 20-fold increase. And what they said is that the Zika virus was identified in several infants who were born with it, but then there were other infants that were born with it that tested negative for the Zika virus. So what they're saying is that this, what a microcephaly is really just a small brain, a baby that's born with the skull is smaller, mm-hmm. and there could be some kind of developmental disabilities that may happen, as well as miscarriages. However, what they say is that there are other causes that can cause microcephaly. not just the Zika virus. Okay,
right, so they have to narrow it down then through testing and
blood tests. Okay, okay, but there's a high correlation. It doesn't mean everyone that had that, but it was just something, and this is something that we said at the beginning, is that we're getting this information. How did we get, I think normally they said over a period of 1 year, they were saying, I think it was like 150 cases they might have. Then all of a sudden they had a jump of 4,000 babies that were born with it. So this is really like the area that they are really, you know, looking very closely. And that's what really caused us to be, you know, to be aware of, you know, what's going on.
Okay. So what areas have the Zika virus? Where is it found?
Okay. As I said at the very beginning, that this is something that is has been around since the 40s. You know, they're saying that they have had outbreaks in Africa, Southeast Asia, and some of the Pacific Islands. But it wasn't until May 2015 where they had the issue, that warning in Brazil. You know, the Zika virus, and this is the one thing that they're saying about, is that it's going to continue to spread. It'll be difficult to determine how the virus is spread over time. So this is something that we're going to be following.
So
about.
It really wasn't seen in any of the Americas, South America,
no,
North America,
no.
Or the Caribbean, which is what they're talking about now.
Right. Right now, just so you know, is that, you know, the Zika virus, there's been no locally transmitted. Like right now, as far as like the Zika virus is concerned, there have been no cases that transmitted cases of Zika virus have been reported in the continental United States. But
so why are they reporting that there are cases?
What they're saying is that they have people that are coming in who have people who have come from other countries that were infected with the virus. I believe we have a caller on the line. Good morning. Welcome to Health Matters. What's your first name? And if you could tell me where you're calling from.
JD, and I'm from Warwick.
Oh, hi. How are you doing, JD? How can we help you? Welcome to Health Matters.
I heard that they, good show. I heard the other day that they, the virus was, the Zika virus was transmitted sexually, through sexual relations. Is that true? And, you know, what does that mean for the world, I guess, if they don't have a cure for it?
Well, we'll go into yes. There was a report that I also heard on the news. I think it was in Texas that happened. There have been some cases like that, and
I think it was in Texas.
In Texas, yes, I heard about that. They do have that down, you know, for the CDC, as far as the you know, the mode of transmission. Is that, you know, it can be thrown, you know, it spread the virus through blood transfusion, sexual contact. Have been reported, okay? So we have said some cases, but as I said, this is information that we are getting as it's coming in, and that's something that normally it is transmitted vis-a-vis
usually mosquito. It's through mosquitoes. I guess they're discussing whether or not it can be transmitted in another way through a blood.
Yeah, but you know what concerns me, folks, is that, you know, the government definitively said that the only way it can be transmitted is through the sting of a mosquito.
Well,
now we're finding out, no.
No, Jay, this is all stuff that is available. You know, you go to the CDC website on the Center for Disease in reference to it, and it is listed right there, is that, you know, they're talking about it. It's primary through the mosquitoes, but there have been reported cases of it being spread through blood transfusion and sexual contact. But as I said, if there is any concern, that's something that we want to wait until we hear the information that is coming in. And that's what I always stress, is that these are issues that you should, you know, discuss with your doctor.
Doctor, just one other thing. You know, my father had pancreatic cancer, and but he didn't die from pancreatic cancer. He died from sepsis that he got in a facility.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
that's an infection of the blood. Sepsis. Okay.
Well, it was either C. diff or it was sepsis. Maybe it was C. diff. Now,
okay.
C. diff, you can catch from touching things.
That's right,
right.
Correct. That when we talked about the mode of transmission, it's primarily transmitted through touching. Yes.
Right.
Okay, so that was it. My, you know, my wife's a medical professional. She and I were visiting my father when he was ill with the cancer, and maybe it did him a favor because his surgery didn't do well. But when we were there, a woman said that her entire place was, you know, her entire care center. He had gone back for rehab. And maybe this can save some people's lives out there. For example, my wife noticed that when they brought my father a carton of water, not a carton of water, but a pitcher of water.
Yes.
They didn't have it named after him. They said that they washed it in heavy duty dishwashers, but none of these things were labeled, and they just got the feeling that they didn't go through the normal practice that they had to do. Maybe you can comment about that, and maybe you can caution other people about, you know, visiting a nursing home or other places like that, and what to look for.
I know as far as with C. diff, Jay, go ahead.
Yeah, C. diff can be transmitted very easily, and I believe it's a spore that...
Yes, and that's why it's very, very... It's very
virulent.
Present for a long period of time,
yes. So it will live on bed rails and overbed tables and handles and such, and that's why it's so important when you're in the hospital, you know, that or a nursing home or another facility, because there's large, you know, there's many sick people and staff go from person to person. That's why the CDC and the Joint Commission, New York State Department of Health, they really enforce and company, you know, facilities enforce hand washing. That is the number one way to prevent these infections, and then the cleaning of areas where
the
patients
environment,
are.
Yes, yeah.
A lot of times, you talked about the water pitcher. Normally those are disposable, and they're not used between patients.
These were reused.
So
definitely,
you know, that's something
reused.
You know that you want to be sure that, you know, for me, you know, as a healthcare professional, we're acutely aware of things when we're
I was just hospitalized.
You were just in the
and I have
so
my
I
own
have,
picture.
Yeah.
That's it.
I
man.
Have
that's
my
what
eyes
they filled
open when I go in. Is there soap in the dispenser? Is there paper towels? You know, are there gloves available for the staff? Did I see housekeeping come in and wipe things down? Those are important too when you're, you know, in a facility. So you have to just keep those, keep your eyes open when you're visiting. And, you know, certainly washing your hands, and actually the patient washing their hands is important.
No, it is important, like keeping your, you know, just being aware of it, but that's part of how it is transmitted from, you know direct contact.
Unfortunately, you know, when you're in this kind of environment, you're just more susceptible, and it's a little, I don't know how to explain it, but because there's many...
Your immune system is compromised,
Your immune right? system
yes,
is compromised.
Yes, yes.
And it's just unfortunately becomes prevalent sometimes in a facility, whether it's a hospital, nursing home, adult home, assisted living.
Even Chipotle, you saw Chipotle.
Right, the Chipotle, and what did they have to do? And you hear it on cruise ships with the neurovirus.
Yeah.
They have to actually shut down. And they have to clean everything.
And they also have to educate.
So
I think they closed down everything. They educated
right.
everyone.
Providing,
and the mode of transmission is... Eating contaminated food. I mean, that's how you get food poisoning. So
yeah, you know, in the case of Chipotle, they still haven't figured out where it came from. The only thing they did is exactly what you said. They shut down everything and, worked on every component.
And most of the time will eradicate whatever the problem was.
And Jay, thank you so much for your question. It was very good. I know we're talking about infection control and we're talking about the Zika virus, but that was all part
That's
and parcel of my opening. Thank you so much for your call, Jay. Okay, we're listening to Health Matters. My name is Peter Fell. When we come back, we will talk more on the Zika virus and the symptoms, diagnosis, and treatments of it. Listen to Health Matters.
Are you an RN or an LPN, caregiver or aide, and want to be part of a first-class, full-service home healthcare agency? Then call A&T Healthcare at 845-638-4342. High standards of care from pediatric to adult patients need your TLC. You are dependable, compassionate, honest, and sensitive to the needs of others. Whether you are highly skilled or wanting to learn, A&T has the finest training program in the tri-state area. And if you'd like to be part of the number one home healthcare agency that makes a difference every day in so many lives, then call A&T Healthcare at 845-638-4342 today or visit at-healthcare.com.
Hi, this is Sarah O'Connell.
And this is Jonah Treeboiser.
And we're the hosts of Radio Rotary, heard every Saturday morning at 11:30.
Each week, week, we chat with your neighbors about great things happening in your community and around the world.
Radio Rotary.
Right here on WTBQ, radio worth listening to.
Hi, this is Alan Fernandez. Join me at the Jazz Getaway with Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and Duke Ellington and more every Sunday at 7 p.m. on WTBQ.
WTBQ weather.
We'll have some fog out there this morning. Otherwise, it does become partly sunny this afternoon with a high still mild near 50. Clouding up tonight, we have an offshore storm forming. It could get close enough to bring clouds. It goes to the upper 20s. Then becoming mostly sunny for Friday with a high around 40. Clear and colder Friday night in the low 20s, and sunny and pleasant on Saturday, 40 to 45. From the WTBQ Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Tony Salima.
WTBQ.
And welcome back to Health Matters. My name is Peter Fell. I'm the Director of Education, A&T Healthcare. And joining me this morning is my wife, Ann Fell, the regional director of Pacey That's Care correct. Services at A&T Healthcare.
Okay.
A&T Healthcare is a home healthcare agency. We have offices in Newburgh, Kingston. Corporate offices in New City. We have an office in Westchester, New York City, right on Madison Avenue, as well as we have an office in New Jersey. We're very proud of the work that we do at A&T Healthcare. We're very happy and honored to be broadcasting Health Matters every Thursday from 10 to 11. Today's topic, we're talking about the Zika virus.
Yes. So, and thank you, Jay, for your question. That was very informative, I think, to all of our audience, and something that we can even talk more about in the future. But Peter, can you tell us what is the mode of transmission for the Zika virus? And actually, what is mode of transmission?
Okay, mode of transmission, I said it at the very beginning, if you didn't see it, the mode of transmission is how does an infection go from one person to the other? Or how does someone contract an infection? I know Jay gave the example about the Chipotle virus. Well, if you're eating something that's contaminated, the mode of transmission is you're eating it, and that's how you ingest it. Right. If something, food is contaminated, be with salmonella or E. coli or what have you, you ingest it. That's the mode of transmission. But the primary mode of transmission of the Zika virus is through mosquito bites. The Zika virus is transmitted to people primarily through the bite of an infected mosquito, and there's a specific species of it, okay? It's the Aedes species mosquito, so don't think it's every mosquito is going to be able to transmit it. This is a specific mosquito.
So it's not every kind of mosquito.
That's correct, okay. Yes. It's that. And these are the same mosquitoes that they spell, can spread other diseases. But what it is with the mosquitoes is that they typically lay their eggs in or near standing water. By standing water, that can include like buckets, bowls, animal dishes, flower pots and vases, and they primarily bite the people who live indoors and outdoors near people. And it's during the day. One of the things is that the Zika, the mosquitoes, they spread the Zika. They're aggressive daytime biters, okay? They also bite at night, but they're primarily do it during the daytime. That's and the mosquitoes become infected when they feed on a person already infected with the virus, and then the infected mosquito can spread the virus to other people through bites. So that's really
It's interesting that you say that they're aggressive daytime biters, because we know when we're sitting outside in the warmer months, it's in the evening we tend to see more mosquitoes. I know our daughter Nicole, a lot of times, she feels like she's, there for their...
And there is some validity to that. Some people are more prone to be bitten by mosquitoes. There is something that's true about that. Just to do the other correlation, I know in Health Matters we did have a show on Lyme disease. I know Congressman Chris Gibson had called in and talked about it. But that also is one that is a vector-borne disease that is transmitted via a tick. Okay, there's specific ticks that it would be transmitted. But the thing that you have to remember about the Zika virus, as far as the continental United States is concerned, is that local transmission of the Zika virus has not been reported in the continental U.S. One of the things I know, we don't have mosquitoes now because we really are still in the wintertime.
So you see a few little insects waking up because it's been so warm. I've seen a couple of insects here and there outside, and I was surprised, to see that.
Okay, and this, you know, this information that I'm relaying is from the New York State Department of Health, is that since 2011, there have been laboratory-confirmed Zika cases identified in travelers returning from areas with local transmission. So it wasn't that they contracted it here in the United States, but they were in an area where it was present, and they had it when they returned. And they're saying that there were 9 cases in New York State that were all returning travelers. Okay, but... they're saying that, you know, current outbreaks in the American cases among U.S. travelers will most likely increase, okay, as more people are going there, they're becoming back. And what they're saying is that the imported cases may result in virus introduction and local spread in some areas of the United States. But what I want to stress to you is that this is information that we are just collecting, okay? It's just that we're getting inundated with different reports, and I just want to make sure that we understand that this is lucid, that, you know, we're going to find out, you know, whatever, you know, the directive is from the Department of Health as to what it is and where there may be, you know, some kind of concerns.
Right, right. So actually, you know, we mentioned it earlier that the Zika virus has been and was first isolated in 1947. So it's not a new virus, and it only has been sporadically reported in humans, and mostly from Africa and South Asia. So we're seeing some surge or some cases here, you know, mm-hmm. on the other side of the world, the South America, Caribbean, and some cases being reported in North America and New York, but they are not that they've become infected here, but they've actually visited the areas where this has been seen. So, Peter, what are some of the symptoms of the Zika virus?
You know, and this is one of the things, that, one of the daunting problems that, you know, we have, I know, with the infection control and infectious disease, is that what it is that they say that 1 in 5 people infected with the Zika virus becomes ill, okay? That's only like, was it, 20%?
People
may be okay. infected by it, but they may not even know about it. We said before that the common symptoms of this. So having said that, if you are 1 in 5, the most common symptoms of the Zika virus are fever, rash, joint pain, or conjunctivitis. They also include the muscle pain and headaches. And this is the incubation period. I want to make sure people understand this. The incubation period is the period when the time of exposure to the symptoms. So let me use chickenpox, although we do have the varicella virus. But what happens is that if a child had chickenpox, this happened when I was little, okay? But when you were exposed to the chickenpox by someone, the incubation period was 21 days. I believe that was the same as the Ebola virus.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
And what it is that if you were exposed to someone that had chickenpox, you said, yeah, I saw this person, Jimmy so-and-so, had chickenpox on Monday. Well, you were playing with them on Monday. There was like a 21-day period where you could come down with the thing. After the 21 days, then it was likely that you weren't, you didn't actually come down with it. So that's what the incubation period. But what they're saying is for the Zika virus disease, it's not known, but it's likely to be a few days to a week. So this is one of the things that it's information that's coming in that, let's say you were exposed to someone, how long would it be? They're saying that the illness is usually mild with symptoms that last for several days to a week. But usually it remains in the blood of an infected person for a few days, but can be found longer in some people. So I guess.
But they're not even sure how long. They're not reporting how long. You know, it doesn't stay in your, as far as we know, it doesn't stay in your body forever.
Right, right.
I don't know if they're seeing any.
But as I said, this is something that, you know, as the information comes in, now they're honing in on it, and they're going to have like more additional information. But it's almost like if someone was infected with the virus who showed no symptoms, how long was it present? Was it 2 days?
Right, and even if you have had some symptoms like joint pain or conjunctivitis, you might not have paid too much attention to it because you thought it was a simple cold or simple virus.
Right.
Unless you become very sick from something, a lot of times you're not going to go to the doctor or report it or anything like that. And no one else in your family would have gotten it from you because it's not contagious from person to person, per se. So then it goes away, so no one is really keeping track of some of these infections.
I think what's important, and this is what happens as far as whenever there's travel, is that if you have traveled in the areas that are, they had a whole list of them, as all like the Caribbean, Brazil, South America, they have a whole list of all the different cultures. If you had traveled in to any of those particular countries or islands, and you did show those kind of symptoms, that's something that you should go to your doctor, healthcare profession, and think that's one of the things that they'll be asking, like, have you traveled to so-and-so? I know that we don't have mosquitoes up here, but a lot of times people want to escape the winter, although there's been a very mild winter, they want to go to where, the weather is warm, where they may be present. But this is why it's important that you communicate this information to your doctor.
Right. But so if you go to your doctor, what would the treatment be necessarily?
Well, as I said, this is something, as I said, from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, is that there's no specific treatment for it, okay? Like, there's no vaccine or medication available to prevent or treat the Zika virus. However, they are working, they are doing research. U.S. government is beginning research into a possible vaccine for the mosquito-borne Zika virus that's suspected of causing an unusual birth defects as it spreads in Latin America. But don't expect this anytime soon. It could be anywhere from 4 to 5 years before it actually comes to fruition. It's a very tedious process as far as getting a vaccine that would work appropriately, but it is something that they are working on. But you treat the symptoms, as I said, very rarely are you hospitalized for it, and I think they're saying even deaths are very rare. But the symptoms really just get plenty of rest. It sounds like if you had the flu, drink fluids to prevent dehydration. You can take aspirin. As I said, I'm telling you what medicine to say. This is something you always have to discuss.
So you can't take aspirin.
With your
Do not take aspirin. You don't take
aspirin. Oh, I'm sorry. Right? Tylenol. Right. I'm sorry. Yes, thank you.
Because with viruses,
yeah.
You don't always want to take aspirin or non-steroidal anti-inflammatories because they can cause other problems.
Right, and that's what I said. As I said, we're not saying, well, this is the treatment, that if you think you have the Zika virus, to please, go out and start taking, some Tylenol or something like that. Okay, you're listening to Health Matters, and when we come back, we'll be going over the prevention of the Zika virus and how you can, additional information. You're listening to Health Matters.
ANT Healthcare hires the most qualified pediatric high-tech RNs and LPNs. They provide care with the utmost compassion and sensitivity. ANT Healthcare are committed to providing their pediatric and adult patients with the highest standards of nursing care. By providing high-caliber, reliable nurses and high-quality service, ANT Healthcare consistently delivers more value for each dollar spent. Call 845-638-4342 or visit at-healthcare.com.
Hi, this is Rob Loferese. Tune into my show Saturday morning at 9 a.m. and ask Rob for the right advice on how to buy or sell your car or home and keep more money in your pocket, right here on WTBQ, radio worth listening to.
Hi, this is your friendly farming family physician, Dr. Nathan Johnson from Crystal Run Healthcare. Join me and my wife, Irisha,
every Tuesday from noon to 1 on Road to Liberty, where we will focus on family matters and healthy habits on WTBQ, radio worth listening to.
WTBQ,
you're feeling all right. Feeling all right. Welcome back to Health Matters. Why? Because your health does matter. My name is Peter Fallon, the Director of Education at A&T Healthcare. And joining me is my wife, Ann Feller, also from A&T Healthcare. We have a lot of information that we're giving to everyone that we're really relaying for the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. And anyway, do we have...
Right. So why is there such a concern for pregnant women with this virus?
Okay. This is something that really, and again, I'm going to be reading it directly from the CDC Health Advisory. What it is that in Brazil, all of a sudden they had an increase. There were 44,000 specific cases of some children that had come down with that particular...
Children born with?
Right. 4,000 that were born with the microcephaly, which is since the outbreak started. And what we were saying is that microcephaly, which is just like a small skull or a brain that the child was born, they can have many other causes, not just the Zika virus, but this was like a very big spike that they were concerned about. And we're hearing all the stuff about pregnant women, but what they're saying right now, and this is the advisory that I'm reading directly from the CDC, is that the CDC health advisory includes information and recommendation about the Zika virus, clinical disease diagnosis and prevention, and provides travel guidance for pregnant women and women who are trying to become pregnant. Okay, this is how it's called. I'm reading directly. Until more is known and out of an abundance of caution, pregnant women should consider postponing travel to areas where the Zika virus transmission is ongoing. Okay. A pregnant women who do travel to these areas should talk to their doctors, and this is what we're always saying, the doctors and healthcare providers first, and strictly follow steps to avoid mosquito bites during the trip. Okay, women trying to become pregnant should consult with their healthcare providers before traveling to these areas and strictly follow steps to avoid mosquito bites during the trip. So as it is, I mean, that's been like the big key thing that we've been hearing on the news. And that's really what it is that, you know, the one doctor was in the Journal News, I don't have his name, but he said, no, he would tell, you know, like, none of his patients to go. But as I said, this is what you should be discussing with your healthcare provider as to what it is. But as I said, there was a big spike in Brazil, and they're not sure, you know, there's a strong association with it, but it's not everything that's totally definitive. And as I said, this is one of the things that we're going to be getting additional information as things go on. Okay. All right.
So there's no vaccine.
Yet. Yeah.
You have to avoid mosquitoes. And so how do you avoid them? Well, just like with West Nile and other things that we've talked about.
Even like the Lyme disease. Know, go ahead. Prevention is always the best. Prevention is always the best.
You wear long sleeves. You try to, you know, you keep your doors closed. You keep your screens in place. Prevent mosquitoes from coming into your home, and you can certainly use mosquito repellent type sprays and such.
I know that they talked about DEET, and they gave the example Off, Cutter, Sawyer, Ultrathon. Those are, as I said, like wearing long sleeve shirts and stuff like that. You know, they're saying that, you know, staying places with air conditioning, or that use windows and door screens to keep mosquitoes outside. I mean, a lot of this is very basic information. And, you know, the other thing that I know, if you're traveling and stuff, they're always saying, like, choose a hotel or lodging with air conditioning or screens on the windows and doors. You know, they're saying that, you know, it's always important that, you know, just like the clothes that you wear. And those are real, like, the important things as far as preventing it. We talk about this also. You know, there are a lot of things about to control the mosquitoes, okay? You know, a lot of times just mosquitoes, and this is something I know the Department of Health in Rockland County, what they have done is that, you know, they go around and they talk about, you know, they say that the female mosquitoes, they lay several hundred eggs on water-filled containers, and it could be as simple as, you know, like a little puddle bucket of water. I know bird feeders, we have one at our house, and we're supposed to be emptying it in once a week. We shouldn't just leave that standing water that's there.
We always empty it.
I know I do have a pond, a koi pond that's mine, but I always have during the spring and summer months, the water's always flowing because they have the waterfall.
Right, they talk about stagnant water, like pools that aren't drained, water that's pooling on top of something, even ponds and such that don't have any, you know, movement in them. And I know a lot of the health departments offer the mosquito dunks or the little
tablets
that you can put in that prevent and reduce mosquitoes from breeding there. So, and of course, if you have any questions about Zika, you can call the local health department right here in Orange County.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they'll have the information for you as well and help to answer some
and
of the questions.
And even on the CDC website.
You can certainly go on the CDC website. New York State Department of Health also has information available to the public.
And as I said at the beginning, there's a lot of information that is coming in. You know, they're going to be finessing it, but this is something that there was, you know, it's like they say, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. So we probably will be updating it further throughout our shows on health matters, and just as far as we get, like, the different information that's there.
Right, right.
And one of the things that I keep stressing is that, you know, as far as if you did travel to any of those places where it might be present, if you find any of those symptoms, you could discuss it with your doctor. And I know that was one of the things I remember with the Ebola virus. And remember, we would ask, did you travel to these particular countries that were present?
If you go to the hospital, if you go to the doctor's office,
they were still asking when I went to the hospital.
Even we ask, you know, when people call. So
as I said, this is something that's really on the forefront, and that's why we brought it up, today on Health Matters. But as I said, there's going to be more information that will be coming. And as I said, you know, any question, any major question, please, you know, discuss it with your doctor.
Right, and at this time, there have not been, is that correct? There have not been any cases of transmission
right,
here in the U.S.
Right, just people that have traveled from the country
that were
identified, that they traveled.
Back.
But no, there had. Right. And as I said, it's winter time, so we really don't have, like, the mosquitoes that are around.
Right,
so,
right.
And as I said, it's a specific mosquito that transmits. It's not like any mosquito, okay? It's a specific one.
Okay.
So just like with the tick, you know, the Lyme disease
right,
is a specific tick that would do something
exactly,
like that.
Exactly.
Okay. Did you have some information?
We haven't been talking about it because actually the flu season has been, you know, upon us for, what is it, October to March? But there has been some widespread flu activity in the United States, not in our area, but in California, Maryland, Massachusetts, North Carolina. But here in New York, there has been some regional flu activity reported, as well as in Connecticut and Rhode Island. And in New Jersey, there's some local activity of the flu. So it's not too late to get your flu vaccine if you still want to do it. Every pharmacy and most pharmacies and physician offices are offering it. So, you know, prevention is often the key.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever had the flu, it's not something you'd probably ever want to get again. So
do
have to get the flu vaccine every year. It doesn't, you know, it's not for your lifetime. It's once a year. So just a reminder that you can still get your flu vaccine if you want.
And even, like, you know, continuing along the theme about the chain of infection is that, you know, the flu is transmitted through direct contact,
right.
Okay? It's not necessarily, it's not an airborne thing that you could be standing in the same room, but if you come in contact with the droplets or something, well, then it's really considered contact
right.
in that sense. And what you have to remember is that a lot of times there's so many flus in the wintertime because people are indoors for a longer period of time. It's darker. And the reason we're indoors more of the time is because it's so cold, but we've had a very mild winter. So I think more and more people are going outside. But the idea is that you're indoors for longer periods of time. You don't go outside, and it gets dark earlier. So you really are present. And the longer you're in contact with someone on a different basis like that, the more susceptible, or more likely you are going to become infected and with someone else. But as I said, this is from being in close contact or people that
are
infected.
Well, it's nice to know the days are getting longer.
But it was a good point what Ann brought up is that you can still get the flu vaccine.
Yes,
you can still get it now.
You can still get it right on through. So.
And there's nothing better than that kind of prevention. What we always say about the flu, I know Ann said it, if you've ever had the flu before, but one of the things that you have to remember is that it could be very, very tough thing to have, and it may not necessarily assure you that you will not contract the disease. Okay, but it would lessen the severity of it. And just because we're talking about it, one of those myths that people say, oh, every time I got the flu vaccine, I came down with the flu. What it was is that's not true at all as far as the vaccine. You can't get it from the vaccine. What it is that when you get the flu vaccine, it's about a two-week period before your body develops the resistance to the particular flu virus. And what happens is it was just the time, and is that you had the flu shot, and then you were exposed to someone
right.
with the flu, and it had not kicked in yet. So that really is the basis of it.
And don't forget tomorrow to celebrate National Wear Red Day with Go Red for Women and Wear Something Red to increase awareness of heart disease.
All right. Well, this is Health Matters. Really, it's been this is a very good show. We're going to hear more about this. This is something that we will be talking about, as you can see, as the months go on. But as I always say at the end of the program, where does the time go? I always say the same thing. Follow us on Facebook. And as I always say to you, your family and friends, wish you all the best. And listen to the Health Matters. Goodbye now. See you next week.
Yeah.